We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
My name is Jari Bolander. Welcome to the Entrepreneur Ethos Podcast. On this podcast, we're going to take a deep dive into the traits, values, beliefs, and skills of all sorts of entrepreneurs to learn how to build a more ethical, inclusive, and resilient world. Let's get started.
Today, I talk with Mark McGinnis, who hosts the 21st Century Creative Podcast, where he interviews creatives and entrepreneurs of all types, because in this day and age, quote, there's a lot more opportunity for creatives and a lot fewer excuses for playing small, unquote. Mark's also a poet who finds that poetry helps him relate to the creative struggles his clients may face. I have known Mark for the better part of 10 years, and at one point, he was my creative coach. He has authored several books, including 21 Insights for 21st Century Creatives and Productivity for Creative People. Mark has always wanted to find a way to make a living helping others, first through hypnotherapy and then through coaching creatives, years before the ideas of a, quote, life coach was even heard of. He now coaches entrepreneurs in creative industries who are well into their careers and are looking to further develop their potential. Rather than holding his clients accountable, Mark explains, he makes a space for them and encourages them to enlarge their perspective, and most of all, helps them break through the wall of fear. Mark believes there is more than one way to grow as both an entrepreneur and a creative, and has found that working with a specific type of client rather than trying to scale up his business has worked well for him. Mark also talks about the intimacy of podcasting and the importance of listening to feedback to make a podcast that creatives who listen to him can respect and appreciate. Now, let's get better together. Mark McGinnis, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Jari. It's always good to talk to you.
Yeah, I mean, we've known each other for, I think it's been over a decade.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think we're definitely racking up some points.
Yeah. I mean, it was really funny. I was thinking the other day, I was like, you know, how did I actually get to meet you? And I remember I was part of your Lateral Action blog email list. And I remember you sent an email saying, hey, I have a discount on my coaching services. You'll get a five pack or a three pack or something for some ridiculously low amount of money. And I'm like, I'm in. I'm sold, you know?
You've got a good deal. I don't do that anymore.
I know. I got a sweet deal. And I've really appreciated your guidance and friendship over these last years, because
you know, as a creative coach, which is what you do for a living, among all the other great things that we'll talk about in a second, I have really found that your perspective on creativity, on being productive, on, you know, thinking of new ideas and the big creative side of entrepreneurship, I think you've got pretty well nailed down. Because pretty much everything that you do, you know, well, I'm a super fan really, but I'm like, it's just been always been fascinating. And I would, you know, I know kind of your backstory, but I would love to hear again, for the people that are listening, you know, how did you come to be a creative coach and a poet and an entrepreneur and all these great things?
Well, I took the scenic route. I mean, it all began with poetry, really. I realized fairly early on that that's what I want to do, like most entrepreneurs, really.
Yeah, I think
And it kind of dawned. So obviously I went to college and read English and spent 3 years reading poetry, and that was great. But then the part about, well, what are you going to do with it afterwards? That took me a little longer to figure out, because I realized fairly quickly that I wasn't going to get paid a lot to write poetry. I turned out I was allergic to academia, so that I thought that would be my escape route. That didn't work out. And then I ended up actually training as a hypnotherapist, because I got very interested in, the potential of I've always been interested in creativity, the creative process. And I got interested in hypnosis as an idea of, you know, unlocking creativity and seeing what you could discover. And it turned out to train as a hypnotist, you either had to be a stage hypnotist or a therapist. And I didn't want to be a stage hypnotist. And I didn't particularly want to be a therapist, but that seemed like the lesser of the two evils. And I went and trained, and I made this amazing discovery that I really like working with people, which I would never have expected as a, you know, confirmed introvert Brit and a poet. And that took me on a journey of discovery, really, because I started off consulting in London in the mid-90s, and I had all kinds of people from all walks of life walk through that door, from stopping smoking to losing weight to trauma to depression to anxiety to relationship issues, whatever. But I realized fairly early on there was one category of clients that really stood out for me, and this was the novelist with writer's block, the West End actor with stage fright, the film director dealing with the stress of being a film director. And I realized what they all had in common was that they were all creative. And I thought of myself as creative, being a poet. And that meant that there was this kind of unspoken connection that we had, or we had similar values. And I would absolutely include entrepreneurs in that category, because to me, entrepreneurship is just as creative a discipline as making something artistic.
Oh yeah, for sure. It's applied creativity, for sure.
Right. And so after a while I thought, you know what? Most of these people don't really have a mental health problem. They put their heart and soul into their work. So sometimes they need to work on their heart and soul, but why don't we call it coaching? So we demedicalize this a little. And so that was 1996. I hung up my shingle as a creative coach when, you know, like it seems like these days it's suddenly, it's quite popular, but in those days it certainly was not, and certainly not in London. But I thought this is what I wanted to try. And I've done various other things on the way, but the coaching creatives has been the real thread that just kept me going and staying motivated. And I'm still doing it all this time later, when so many other things have fallen by the wayside.
Yeah. No, I mean, 1996 to be a coach, quote unquote. Yeah, that must have been a bit of avant-garde, I guess would be the word I would use. You know, if your parents are anything like mine, they're like, so entrepreneur, coach, so how do you make any money? You know, don't you have a job? And you're like, yeah, mom,
well,
dad, I have a job.
You know, I mean, I still have good friends, and maybe you have the same, after 25, 30 years, maybe after the second glass of wine, they'll say, so tell me again, what exactly is it you do?
Every time I talk to my parents, it's the same way. And I've got friends similar, like my fiance Minerva. She's always like, well, you got like six jobs, right? And I'm all, well, what do you mean? And so she just rattles off all the clients and side projects and companies and hustles. And I'm all, yeah, six is about right. You know, there was this old, I always loved this In Living Color, that old comedy sketch show with Damon, the Wayans brothers, which is just the best show. And that's Jim Carrey's sort of debut as a comedian was on there. They had this sketch about being Jamaican. And that, like, all Jamaicans had, like, 20 jobs. So I always thought that was funny. He's like, how many jobs do you have? How many jobs do you have? So wow. I mean, that's creative coaching. You know, like, again, I first found you on Lateral Action. And you were doing some stuff with Brian Clark early on, if I remember.
That's right. Yes. Yes. I had a very interesting apprenticeship with Brian on how to communicate and speak to an audience online. So, I mean, if anyone's familiar with copyblogger.com, one of Brian's big things early on was educating the internet about headlines and headline copy. And I think he's done that, if anything, rather too well, because everywhere you go, you've got headlines vying for your attention.
Yes.
But one of the fun things about working with Brian was that he was the strategic mastermind behind the whole project. And my job, at least to begin with, was to write the blog every week. And I used to play a little game of seeing if I could get the headline past Brian without him tweaking it. And the first, you know, to begin with, there was a lot of tweaking and rewriting.
Yes.
But towards the end, he was even toning me down a little bit.
Oh, wow.
So that was quite cool. And I did get a few past him in the end. But I, you know, I learned a tremendous amount from Brian because he has got such a great creative and entrepreneurial brain. He's a great writer, but also a great strategic thinker. And, you know, he's launched goodness knows how many companies. And
I lost track. I mean, I'm in his unemployable initiative, which is now called Seven Figure Small, I think. Joanna's in it too, as well as Jared Morris, who runs the community. Yeah, he's just got so many things going on. I think he's also does this thing called Further for Gen Xers, aging Gen Xers like me, which I hate to say, but you know, that's the one thing you can count on, right? Death and taxes. So, so how is all, like, do you think that the internet really is what kind of made your coaching accessible? Because I got to believe in the 90s, it was just sort of starting, you know, and
yeah.
How did that all work?
Well, I once saw Billy Connolly do a routine about what it was like to grow up in 1950s Scotland. And he said it was like the whole world was in black and white and the sky was really low. And then rock and roll came along and he said, yes, this is it. He said it was though life came into color after that. And I wouldn't say it was quite as dramatic as that, but certainly in terms of the viability of what I want to do, without the internet it would be a lot harder, because, you know, I work with a very particular kind of client, and I early on I had to move to London to work with that kind of client because they were not there in the backwater of North Devon where I grew up. But even then, to find the right kind of person at the right stage of their career with the right level of ambition and whatever, it was really looking for the needle in the haystack. And since I've been online and I've had a presence through my writing and more recently podcasting, it was really, you know, writing that kicked it all off with the advent. I started blogging about 2006. I realized, you know, the world is my oyster. I can work with clients all over the world, and that means I can be picky, but also so can they, because they, you know, you come online now, there's hundreds of coaches, thousands of them, and you can find the right kind of, or consultant or mentor or whatever you want to call it. It's much, much easier to find a connection with somebody that who really is a specialist in your world, so to speak. So these days have a lot of international clients and get quite adept at working out time zones in various points in America or Europe or Southeast Asia or wherever, and how that fits into my day here in the UK. But what it means is that it's much, much easier for me to know that there'll be a steady stream of the right kind of clients to do what I want to do. And I can specialize really to my heart's content in working with inspiring, ambitious, unconventional creatives, entrepreneurs, you know, people in the arts or media or whatever. And, you know, there's plenty of those people around the globe.
Yeah, because I know you had sort of changed your coaching model. Has it been like 5 or 6 years ago? Was it when you went to the new model? I don't remember.
About 2013. I switched over, and at that stage, I stopped doing a lot of the other stuff that I was kind of overdoing, like conference speaking or running workshops, and just focused on coaching. And I'd gone from previously, it was a model that I'd inherited from therapy where people come along and book a session by the hour. And if they want another one next week, they'll book another one next week. And if not, but since then I've thought, no, I only work with people when we make a certain level of commitment in terms of the time that we are going to commit to this project. And people either want to do that or they don't.
Yeah.
And since then, you know, the results that I've got and the satisfaction that I get from knowing, okay, I'm going to be in somebody's life for this period of time. We're going to go on this journey together and things will not be the same afterwards. That has gone through the roof.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, it seems like the focus and, you know, in the entrepreneur kind of sense, you're kind of like the kind of co-founder coach kind of thing. Like there was a great, documentary about the heavy metal band Metallica. I don't know if you know who Metallica. I mean, everyone knows who Metallica.
I know who Metallica. Yeah.
I mean, I know
they even made it. They even made it to the UK.
Yeah, they even made it to the UK. They had a documentary called "Some Kind of Monster," and it was the story of their addiction problems, specifically the lead guitarist and singer James Hetfield. And how they were trying to do their new album, and they were just like tearing apart. Like, and this whole, it's a great documentary about how success and fame and pressure and creativity can just boil over, and personal problems can explode. And they brought in a coach, creative coach, and a kind of therapist coach or whatever. And there's a scene where, you know, he's trying to like help them with their creative process. And mm-hmm. you can tell that the therapist, I don't remember, he's a famous one, I don't remember his name. You can tell that the coach / therapist / you know, mentor crossed the line. And as soon as he crossed the line, it's like they realized, oh shit, like he has now got us to the level where we need to be. And it was almost like when you see it, it's subtle, but you're like, oh wow, they finally get it, that this creative process, this collaboration, this alchemy of Metallica and what they do and how they're creative and how they're building all these great things in terms of music or whatever, how not only precious and fragile it is, but how these guys in the room have to do the work. They can't like, they got to do the blue collar work to get it done. They can't rest on their laurels. They can't, you know, they needed that coach to be like, get your act together. And I can see with this, you know, the model where you're sort of in it with them, how in one sense it's freeing because you got, you know, a co-founder, quote unquote, in any endeavor is better than just yourself. But more importantly, I think it's that ability to kind of be held accountable, that you have to do the work. Is that sort of what you find in this process, or are those moments like that where you're the people that you're coaching are kind of like, oh, I finally get it?
Well, I think it's what, I mean, I always say to clients, I'm not going to hold you accountable because then it becomes my goal, not yours. It's not my job to nag you. And I don't have an investment in them achieving one thing or the other. But what I say I will do is I'm going to hold the space for the next few months or the next year. And you can hold yourself accountable within that. It's like you're living the examined life for that period.
Oh,
and I'm not a teacher. I'm not setting homework and scolding people if they don't turn up and do it. But what I will do is, you know, I'm going to have a conversation with them about that. And I'm sure, I mean, I certainly experienced this when I worked with a coach. When you know that you're going to go and talk to somebody next week about how you showed up at today's event, whether you hid and chickened out, or whether you showed up big time and did something brave, then obviously it's going to tilt the balance, isn't it? And it works both ways, by the way. There's been plenty of times in my own private life when I've been faced with a situation and the thought, okay, if I chicken out now, how am I going to face my client on Monday morning? You know, so I need to live it too. So I think when you're in a relationship like that, it really, it's not just about the time that you actually spend talking to each other. It's about the fact that you say, over this period of time, I'm going to commit to this goal, to this change. And sooner or later, I'm going to have to break through that wall of fear, which there's always a wall of fear. And I say to clients, sometimes you can go through it slowly and painfully and agonizingly, or you can go through it really fast in a really intense way and have a big breakthrough moment. And everyone has their own way of doing it.
Wow. I did not know that. That's great. Yeah, that's super interesting. Because, you know, a lot of coaching, you have these models and, you know, they have all these like accountability groups and goals and all this sort of stuff. And I don't know. I'm not that big a fan of accountability groups. I've tried to do them before. And I just, for whatever reason, kind of peter out. I think it's just in my nature to be either self-motivated, or I'm like, oh, you know, this goes, it, you know, I got to zig and zag every week, every day. And, you know, I get too distracted. Maybe that's part of my problem. But what I've found that's been really great, obviously, you know, talking to you, we talk every couple of months, but also listening to your podcasts, the 21st Century Creative, which along with all the books, which has been kind of a great source of, I think, I would say maybe inspiration, motivation, but more importantly, it's sort of hard as an entrepreneur to sometimes think creatively. And the thing that I like about how you've approached it is that you take all sorts of creative people and figure out kind of, I wouldn't say what makes them tick, or actually, why don't you explain it? Because you're better at it than I am.
It can be a whole spectrum. I mean, some people come in and they really want to focus on a piece of creative work. They want to finally write that book, or get the screenplay done, or get good at a certain skill, or whatever. Others, it's much more about their professional development, about all the stuff that goes. They say, I'm good in the studio, I'm good at developing a product, I'm good at writing or whatever, but then I have to go into a meeting and I don't know what to say. You know, my voice sticks in my throat, or I have to speak in front of an audience, I have to persuade people, I have to be involved in tricky conversations and negotiations. And I want to show up at the same level of creativity and intensity and courage that I have in that producing environment. And so a lot of the time we're talking about all the stuff that goes around the outside of creative work, or it could be a bit of both. But the number one thing that I say to every client that we're going to end up working on is you. Because, you know, the kind of clients I work with, they've typically got 10 years plus experience in their field. They are a highly skilled professional in a field that I don't work in. I mean, I'm working with an entrepreneur or a film producer or a novelist or a TV presenter or an actor. I can't do those things. And so that makes me humble enough as a coach to come in and ask the big picture questions, the questions about mindset, about motivation, about self-doubt, courage, resilience, and so on. And those are the things that certainly at that level are going to make the biggest difference. It's not going to be, you know, they've gone beyond the point of needing someone to tell them what to do, or if they need that, they've got a specialist technical instructor. But working with a client at that level, the wonderful thing is if you work with somebody who is very creative, very high performer, they will take a simple question and do an awful lot of work with it. And so I know that, you know, on the one level, I'm not scaling my business in terms of having employees and mass e-learning programs, whatever. But the way I do scale it is I work with people who are going to make a big difference.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting thing to, yeah, I didn't think of it that way. Yeah. Cause you could go kind of both ways. So there's you can go general and broad or specific and narrow, but that specific and narrow could have like orders of magnitude more impact on the world. Huh. You're almost like a venture capitalist for creatives.
Never thought of it that way.
You sort of invest in all these great ideas, and you know, some of, I mean, you know, of course venture capitalists get equity, right? But you get the satisfaction, I guess, seems, and you know, a little bit of the pride in it would be my guess. Interesting. I didn't think of it that way, because I see a lot of these coaching, you know, programs and, you know, 7 steps to blah, 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 whatever, whatever, which is all fine and good, but I just never get kind of turned on by them and turned on in like the way of like, oh, I want to do this, you know?
Well, I think you've got to, as well, this is where a lot of the self-knowledge comes into it. You've got to know what your zone of best performance is. So a book I really love that you probably come across as well is Derek Sivers' book, Anything You Like. Mm-hmm. Anything you want, isn't it? And there was one page of that book that really stopped me in my tracks. He said, your business is your utopia.
Oh.
It's where you create your perfect world and you write all the laws and all the rules.
Wow.
And things happen the way you want them to happen, because then they're not going to happen out in the world at large. And I realized that actually I had created my utopia, which is I get up in the morning, I get breakfast for the kids, I walk them to school, I come home, I do a bit of Tai Chi, and I spend my morning writing. And then in the afternoon, when the time zones are kicking in for North America, I have conversations with inspiring creators. And then I have to do a bit of email. There's even email in Utopia.
rid of that, right?
Maybe see the kids again before bed and watch a movie with my wife. And I thought, well, that's my utopia. And I've had plenty of people saying, oh, you should hire other coaches and scale it and, you know, have this business where you get a percentage of what they do. And I just thought, I don't want to do that. That's not me. That wouldn't satisfy me. I just want to go and lie down when I think about that. But Michael Bungay Stainer, a really great coach who I know and respect, he does the opposite. You know, he said to me once, he realized fairly early on how powerful coaching was and how little interested he was in doing it every day. And so he's done the thing where he hired a load of other, you know, he built a team, he built a machine, and I think he's moved on from this now, but that company Box of Crayons is making a huge difference particularly in the corporate world, in helping use coaching to help the way people lead.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, if anybody's listening to this, it's partly you've got to think about impact and revenue and all of that stuff, but also really just think about, what do you know about yourself and the environment where you do your best work? And what would a business look like if you designed it from the inside out, or at least you took account of that? Because that goes into sustainability too. If, you know, if you build something that you hate doing every day, that's not going to be sustainable.
Yeah, true enough. True enough. That's actually a really good way to think about it. I like that kind of build it from the inside out approach, because a lot of times entrepreneurs want to scale, you know, one metric that matters, grow 10% a week, you know, the Y Combinator model, and, you know, let's build it to a unicorn, you know, and all that.
Well, but, you know, if that is your happy place, if that's where you really catch fire, then go and do that.
Yeah.
But just don't do it because everyone else is saying that's the way it's got to be done, because, you know, there's all kinds of different approaches that you can take these days.
Yeah, true enough. I think when you're in the venture-backed startup world, the drive and motivation when you have investors is clearly build, make more money, scale. And that you don't have to do that. I think that's a great, I think a lot of people don't realize that there's way more entrepreneurs that do what everyone in Silicon Valley calls a lifestyle business, which I'm not a particularly fan of the term, but okay. You know, it's one that's sort of like bootstrapped and you don't have outside investors and, you know, you just sort of go on your merry way. You obviously control more of it if you don't have an investor or a series of investors. So how did the 21st Century Creative Podcast come about?
It came about a bit like, so I started blogging 2006, and that was at a point where I realized I had, you know, every so often I get this thing called media envy. I realize I'm reading a lot of this type of thing or listening or watching it. And I think I want one of those. So I was reading all these blogs and I was thinking, that how hard can that be? I can do that. I read Steve Pavlina's blog, which was terrific, Personal Development for Smart People. And I thought, I know, I'm going to do personal development for creative people. And it just seemed such an obvious thing for me to do. And I did. And it changed my life. And I met Brian and I met you and I met a load of other great people. And we all kind of helped each other. You know, we're learning to kind of build a spaceship in flight, as it were,
exactly.
In those early days.
Right.
But then it got to round about 2016-ish, maybe a bit of earlier than that. And I realized, you know, the blogging was not new and shiny for me anymore. I mean, I still did it a bit, but it wasn't, you know, I wasn't getting up in the morning with the same enthusiasm. But I was listening to a lot of podcasts. And one of the shows I listened to a lot was my friend and yours, Joanna Penn, the Creative Penn podcast. And I just loved the way she showed up. She shared her own journey, what she was doing, she's a writer, she writes thrillers. And then she would interview somebody. And I thought, what a great combination. She's got her own story, her own insights at the beginning of the show, and then the interview. So, you know, in good creative fashion, I stole that format and I put together a show where, and so the idea of the 21st Century Creative is we are at an age where there's a lot more opportunity for creatives and a lot fewer excuses for playing small. Because, you know, traditionally creatives we've made very good victims. We've been very good at waiting for the crumbs to fall from the table of the king or the pope or the publishing company or the record company, and, you know, being told what to do by the grown-ups.
Yes.
And I think now we're at a point where we're coming back to the internet again. There's a lot of, what did Marx say, that, you know, the means of production is now in the hands of the workers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we can create our own work. We can put it out there like you're doing today on this show. We don't need to just go play by the old rules. And I think what I like about the 21st century is, you know, I picked the name to keep me looking forward, to stop getting too nostalgic and romantic the way we poets tend to do. And I just thought, okay, let's have a show where we explore what the opportunities are, what the pitfalls are for creatives in this brave new world. And I do it in seasons, and every season I mix it up. I have fine artists, I have a performer, I have some commercial creatives, I have entrepreneurs like you, Jari, who came in, gave me a great interview.
Yes, I remember.
I have somebody talking about leadership or personal development or weird technology, like, I don't know, flotation tanks, or this week I've got Marcus Dussautoy, the mathematician, talking about AI and the future of creativity, which is pretty mind-blowing. And then the following week, I'll deliberately mix that up and have someone talking about traditional crafts and, you know, what place they have in the modern world. So I like the idea of having a lot of different things mixed in there, but hopefully with a theme of empowerment coming through the whole thing.
Oh, I think it definitely comes through that way. And there's a couple of things that are just just wonderful about it and how you approach it. One, I'm glad you stole Joanna's format because I like Joanna's format. And I'm sure she's like, go ahead, guys, go ahead and take it.
Yeah. She's cool with that.
Yeah, she's great. I had her on the podcast the other day as well. And just love what she does and how she approaches creativity. But more importantly, I think this whole idea of the artisan and the craftsman, I think now more than ever is going to start making a resurgence, because the world is getting a lot smaller, and two, you know, the means of production have been democratized. I mean, like you're in the UK, I'm in San Francisco, we're recording a podcast on my Mac using, you know, Hindenburg and Zoom, and like pretty much I could pretty much do great audio, this whole thing, right, with everything in my little office, and then I can distribute it to the world pretty quickly and easily. And so so now it's just a question of how do you get past all this noise in the world, right? And I think it was Tim Grawl that wrote the book, or wrote one of the books, you know, selling your first 1,000 books. And then there's another person, which I don't remember their name, that wrote your first 1,000 fans, super fans or something, where because of the internet and because of all this creativity that's can be disseminated pretty quickly and easily, you really only need 1,000 people to actually listen to what you have to say or buy your art or whatever. And that's more of an artisan approach as opposed to a mass media approach or a mass market approach. So how have you found, you know, doing the 21st Century Creative podcast in terms of the episodic nature of it? You know, a lot of people, like what I do is I try to do one a week because I just want to get the cadence in. But how has it been to kind of craft that like seasonal theme? I mean, it's almost like this curated look at creativity, which is with all these great people, they're super eclectic. Like I always learned something interesting and new when you had the guy that does your sound on, which I don't remember his name.
Javier Wehler.
Yeah. And let me tell you, your sound production is just A+. It's absolutely beautiful to listen to. And it's so funny because I think the interview, you guys were walking around someplace when you could walk around with people. And he's picking up all these beautiful sounds and noises where normally audio people be like, oh no, we got the wind blower, we got this. But his exploration of audio, it's totally interesting.
Well, Javier is a real phenomenon because he's so many things. He's a great drummer. Oh, he was the drummer in the band Stereophonics for 8 years.
Oh, wow.
These days he plays drums for Phil Manzanera from Roxy Music.
Oh, nice.
So, and I've been to see him play. He's, you know, I mean, he really knows what he's doing. But he's also a composer and a producer. And so I persuaded him to do the music for my show. So I also knew, because there's a lot of media professionals listening to my show, that I had to get good sound production, because I get emails from clients about my microphone technique.
Oh, really?
they're like film people, TV people, radio people, music people. They can hear stuff I can't. So I hand it over to Javier, and now I get consistently good feedback from those kind of people. So it's definitely worth, you know, knowing your audience when you think about how to put together a show. And so that interview, I said, so come on, Javier, you've got to come out from behind the mixing desk and let's interview you, because I mean, he's an amazing guy. He came from South America to London and made his way in the music business. And he's got a great story to tell. So we recorded this interview walking along the riverbank in London. And it was only, you know, it was at a time when, you know, there was a few terror attacks going on. And it was only when we actually set out along the riverbank. And I thought, hang on a minute, we're two guys with rucksacks and we've got wires coming out of the rucksacks and we're walking along in broad daylight in London. This could go badly. But fortunately, nobody gave us a second glance. And you know, we walked along the riverbank and you could hear, you know, birds singing, planes and cars and trucks going past, and you could school children playing and whatever. And I said to Javier, well, you know, you're the guy who's got to sort all this out when you get back home. So, but he did a great job. And, you know, that was, it's really fun being able to play around with ideas like that occasionally.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so fascinating how, you know, because I never knew how hard it was to do audio engineering and make things sound good until I started doing a podcast. And your podcast is what turned me on to try to pay attention to the sound, among other things. Yeah. There's a lot of things that you've taught me through your podcast and just our friendship. But the thing about the medium of podcasting, which is, I think, the reason why it's so popular, the reason why it's growing, and also the reason why it's a great venue for creative people that are trying to get their voice out in the world, is because it's this intimate connection with someone that's having hopefully a long form conversation about some interesting topic. And I know when I did the StoryGrid Editor Roundtable podcast, you know, with Leslie, Valerie, Kim and Anne, they were doing it because, I mean, they're all story nerds like me. They're next level story nerds. They're all just wonderful when it comes to story and stuff, but they were all editors, right? And yep. The amazing thing that they would tell me is like, oh yeah, I get people all the time that'll say, hey, I want to hire you because I like the way you sound on your podcast. Have you had that same kind of experience?
No. Can you give them my number?
I just think it's...
What, you mean for voiceover work?
Well, there's that. No, for like hiring as a coach or voiceover work.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely for coaching. And I would certainly say, since I upgraded from a blog to a podcast, the caliber of coaching inquiries has definitely gone up and been more consistently great. And I've had more people, and this, I guess I'm pleased, and it shouldn't be a surprise. I'm getting more inquiries from people in the media world, like film and TV and so on, because I guess if you present yourself in an audio medium with music and so on, then, you know, it's easier to get those people's attention than maybe with books and just text on the web. So so definitely it has been worth all the, and I agree with you, it's an awful lot more work than I anticipated. Probably as good a job. I didn't know how much work it would be up front.
Oh, me too.
Certainly the payoff. I mean, I really enjoy doing it. And B, in terms of business inquiries, I think when somebody listens to like 40 hours of your voice, they've probably got some kind of connection to you, or they stop listening. And there's quite a few people have said they listen to, you know, they go back, they listen to the show all the way from the show from the beginning, and then they get in touch for coaching. And that's been great.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. I mean, it does seem like you get to know someone a little bit more than just on the written page. Because I mean, you know, I've again, I'm a fan of the blog, of your blog, read a lot of that stuff. Of course, I actually sometimes get to read your books before they come out, which I appreciate very much so. And you know, the style and the personality come out on the page, but it gets reinforced when you hear someone's voice. It's, you know, because I guess there's some things that are just lost in translation.
There's so much. I never forget my voice teacher, Kristen Linklater, who sadly died earlier this month. I was very sad to hear that.
Yeah.
She said to us once, I mean, she was an incredible teacher, has worked with lots of great actors. She specialized in teaching how to speak Shakespearean verse, which is obviously why I went up there.
Of course.
But she said to us one day, she said, your voice is yourself. And that went right through me, because I realized, you know, it's true that there's so much that you pick up in terms of emotional tonality and life experience and attitude that comes through the voice that you won't get from the page, however good a writer is. So I definitely agree there's that much stronger connection that you could get with audio. And also I think audio, typically people will consume it in their private time. you know, when they're in the gym or they're going for a walk or they're driving or chilling out or, you know, cleaning up at home. And it's a real privilege to be in that space, to be the voice in their ear at that time. So I think it's a wonderful medium.
Huh. Yeah, I didn't think of it that way. That it's usually consumed, especially a podcast. Yeah, when you're kind of alone. Well, I mean, reading too, I guess, but yeah, I need to think about that. That's actually pretty insightful. And I need to noodle that one a little bit more, because one of the things that I'm trying to figure out, you know, as I do all these interviews is, you know, what are some of the traits, values, and beliefs that entrepreneurs hold, you know? And that's always like not a challenge per se, but just there's lots of different types of entrepreneurs. There's lots of different types of people. They all do different types of things. Some people are really good, as an example, really good at doing a podcast. Some people are doing a podcast because it's the new thing, and you can kind of tell. Like, it just doesn't sound very, I don't want to say authentic, because I think authentic is a different, I think they're all authentic. It's just that they don't come across as, I don't know what the, how to put my finger on the words to use. It's sort of like the difference between a really, someone that you know is sort of really passionate about like helping, as opposed to someone that's using it for promotion, I guess. Maybe I'm kind of like off base on that, because what I get the sense when I listen to what you're doing is that like, you're really interested in what this person has to offer. You are like legitimately like, this is really cool. I want to share this with the world. I want to share your unique perspective, creativity, what you do, how it affects me, why it's important, even if it's some eclectic thing. I remember, you know, when we first met, you're like, I'm a poet. And I'm like, well, I don't remember the last time I read a poem. Right?
Can we change the subject?
Yeah, can we change the subject? I never, you know. And then, you know, I met my fiance, Minerva. Her father was a haiku poet. And he was what's called an urban haiku poet, right? And I'm like, you know. And then you're like, oh, yeah, I love haiku. And so I think I even sent you his book. But it's just funny.
Yeah, I have it on the shelf behind me here.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just so funny, because I'm like, and then I was in New York and I went to there's a poet museum in New York City. And I'm like, oh, I got to go here because Mark's a poet. And he'll like, if he doesn't know about this, I got to tell him, right? But so even
the Poet's House.
Poet's House, right along the river there. Hudson River.
I need to go there.
Yeah, it's really cool, even if you're not really into poetry, because you're like, there's a lot of poetry, and some of the poetry is literally like stapled on binder paper.
Right, yeah.
It's beautiful, but it's beautiful, right? I never would have appreciated poetry like I appreciate poetry now, but I don't, like, I'm not that into it, but I'm like, okay, like spoken word and all these sort of things. So I really think that the exploration of the different types of creativity, what that means, the importance of it, is really valuable. It's a very valuable thing to have in the world, because we just can't all be, I mean, we're all entrepreneurs, right? Everyone wants to make money. Making money is not evil, but, you know, there's more, right? It feels like there's more to life than that.
Well, you know, this comes back to what we were saying about your own ideal business. I think, to me, the way I see entrepreneurial creativity is they like solving, an entrepreneur gets fired up by solving a business problem. They look at a market, they look at a product, they look at a system that is somehow broken, and they think, I can figure this out, I can make this better. In the way that I, as a poet, I'm fascinated by formal problems. How can I get these words to do this job, because they're not doing the job right now? Or, you know, what would happen if I took the sonnet and then I did this with it? Or, you know, a musician would be interested in solving some kind of technical formal problem in that space. Marcus du Sautoy, when I interviewed him, the mathematician, he gave me a very interesting perspective on mathematics. He said a lot of it he argued, and I was pretty convinced, that it's very creative, because at the high level, it is all about problem solving and storytelling about those problems. He said it's not about doing long division. The computers can do that better than he can. So you know, to me, the sign of a real entrepreneur is someone who, yeah, they want to make money, but that's not the primary motive. I mean, there's plenty of people who want to make money who are not entrepreneurs, but the entrepreneur gets fired up by, here's a business problem, and I reckon I can solve it in a better way than anyone else. And that is really what gets them up in the morning.
Yeah. Wow. That's a great place to end. I couldn't have said it any better myself. So, Mark, appreciate all your time, what you're doing over at the 21st Century Creative, and value your friendship. Stay safe, and looking forward to seeing what else you got in store.
Likewise. Thank you, Jared. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. It was great to have you over at my place on my show, and it's, I love what you're doing with this show. I think it's terrific, as was the book. So keep at it.
I will. Thanks. Thanks for listening to the Entrepreneur Ethos podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did creating it. My hope is that you learned something that can make you a little bit better. If you enjoyed the podcast, please do share it with friends and review it on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can also join my email list by visiting theentrepreneurethos.com to get my thoughts on what I'm doing to get better, as well as what I'm working on. You can also pick up my book, The Entrepreneur Ethos, if you want to learn the traits, values, and beliefs that I think we need to build a more ethical, inclusive, and resilient entrepreneur, and frankly, world community. Feel free to follow me on Twitter at TheDailyMBA, and let me know if you have any questions or recommendations for a guest you'd like me to talk to. Also, drop me a note if you try anything we talked about on this or any other episode. I'd love to hear what's working for you. Until next time, keep getting better.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.